This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Can I do this really quick? Talk dirty to me. Talk dirty to me.
There's our cold open,
right?
Four.
Podcast. We're making a podcast about 30 Rock. Podcast. We're making a podcast about 30 Rock. We're calling it Talk 30 to Me. It is great.
Hi.
I don't know what to do with that. Hi, this is Kimmy.
I'm Kelsey.
And this is Talk 30 to Me.
Talk 30 to Me. We get to talk all about 30 Rock today.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
You know what's exciting about today?
What's exciting about today, Kelsey? I know what's exciting. Why did I ask you back? This isn't rhetorical.
We have our first repeat guest.
Hi, Will.
Hello, America.
Mr. Welcome Will back.
You know, he was here last time for episodes. Our episode four, not the show's episode four. Never mind. Just kidding.
This podcast has grown exponentially since I last came on.
Yeah.
So I feel like I am addressing the country at this point.
Woohoo.
Hey.
Whoa.
Wait a second.
When did you get here, Dana?
I explicitly said no West Coast pages.
Page
if I
off.
Came on.
Page off. Page off. Page off.
So I am the most important page in this apartment.
You know what? I'm the most important...
Man?
That's right.
Even the cat's a woman, so you're safe there.
I'm going to play
big
the man
fish
card.
In a small pond, Blanchard.
Hey, and white men are on the downturn now. I mean, it's definitely the tide is turning. We're not the oppressed ones at this point.
It's definitely not in your favor. I'll be honest about that.
I'd like to take this point to introduce myself.
Oh, yes, yes.
Who are you?
Dr. Demi audience. My name's Dana Lilly. I am Kimmy's roommate and one of her life best friends. And I was a West Coast page.
What?
And I live with her in this apartment. And she chose Will over me as the first page on this podcast.
So the thing is, I actually live with two pages. I live with Dana and my other roommate, Amber. We're both pages. And then when I mentioned, like, oh, we're having Will on because he was a page in New York City, I got chewed out very lovingly by both my roommates. Which are like, you're letting that East Coast page on your show, but your
roommate?
It's not
roommates? The word they use to describe me.
So we decided the best way to explore these great episodes is to have a page off.
But we won't get into that until the second episode.
That's the weirdest thing we've done.
It's great.
It's the weirdest thing.
Can I do a show and tell, even though this is a podcast?
Sure.
Because I brought my page pins.
Oh my God. I don't even have those.
They're in a case.
This is from the 80-year celebration when I was a page.
That
they gave us 8 pins of all the different NBC logos.
Oh, shut up. Even the crappy abstract in logo from the 70s that no one likes.
I think there's like some that were only there for like 6 months.
That
but we got all
awesome.
The pins.
That is
oh
amazing.
Oh my God.
It's pretty impressive. You've shown that to me a few times.
No,
this is on display in my bedroom.
No, Dana wins this one because I was a page at the same time as she was. And in New York, we had a celebration and we got a coaster that is rusting in my apartment.
And Aubrey Plaza was in ours. And I feel like Kenneth might have been too at our celebration.
The actors were there?
Yeah.
I feel like this is no longer a 30 Rock podcast. We're slowly just becoming an NBC Universal official podcast.
I will take a picture
corporation.
Of those. Can we post those on like our Twitter
and
Instagram?
Okay. Yeah.
Those are amazing.
I just didn't know. I wanted the pure reaction. I didn't
talk. That's awesome. I'm impressed.
That was awesome. I'm like, what are you about to show us?
Oh my goodness. You were pretty excited.
Awesome.
That was great.
I'm so excited.
Can you, Dana, when Will was on last time, we heard about how he got started in the page program real quick. So can you give us the quick summary of like, how did you become an NBC page, that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it a horrible time? All that stuff.
It was terrible. No, I'm just kidding. It was wonderful. I loved being a page. I got in because I was an intern, so I met a bunch of people. I like made people have coffee with me like every week.
I met Dana. I knew Dana right when she was becoming a page. First
That's
of all,
right.
can I
remember
can I tell
hearing
a story?
About you?
Because I remember you were on a mission trip in Uganda, and then you found out you were a page, and you posted a big old photo at Kenneth, and you were like, "I'm gonna be a page at NBC." And I just remember being like, "Go, Dana!"
Like, not about going to Africa for 2 weeks. I was like, "Oh, that!" But I'm gonna be a page.
Priority.
So excited.
It was so funny.
But I start. So my first week as a page, I was like, I landed from Africa. And then 17 hours later, I had to go to work.
Oh my gosh.
So like, I don't really remember my first week in the page program because I was
Do you remember
like,
your creepy
lag.
Culty start group that they Like, seriously, when you're a page, like, it's like the, it's a weird cult where you have like sisters and brothers that you start
with.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, you have like your page class. Yes. That's like eight of you. And we were kind of like a funky group because we were the group that was like right before, because I graduated early from school. So mine was the group like right before everyone graduated from college. So we were just kind of like, we were a bunch of goofballs. It was really fun. That's probably shouldn't have
said. There was eight in my startup too.
You were like the ragtag team that everyone cares about. Also, you were a page right before the end of the Tonight Show. You were a page right during the that whole debacle.
I was during Jay's years. Last year,
drove in the 1925 steam engine.
You were driving with all the funny cars. Exactly. There was a crank car one time. I think that was my favorite.
That is amazing.
You have to wind it.
Didn't they use his cars in Iron Man? Like, aren't those his cars that Tony lands on in the Stark suit and like crushes? No, never mind. No, I read that somewhere.
I'm shaking my head because it's disgusting.
Dana, what shows were you specifically assigned to?
Well, ours was like kind of funky because we didn't really have any like live shows that we would work on. So I'd like work on the Tonight Show occasionally, but we did like rotations and departments was more of our like kind of thing. So I worked in like alternative programming and primetime programming and program standards.
I also like that you're holding your pen like you're about to take notes. Like, I gotta write this
down. I brought my notes because I felt weird not bringing them. I like need a notebook in my hands.
I didn't mean to diverge from your story. You had your pen and you're ready.
I know. I feel more comfortable with a pen in my hand.
I know you too well to be interviewing you. I'm gonna let Kelsey keep going. Like, I'm just gonna keep teasing you.
Because I literally just re-listened to your episode because I was just these things in my mind. Yeah, I thought about it.
Well, I was going to say, work Access Hollywood or something like that? Wasn't there another show that was like, okay, never mind. Did you, were you at Burbank building before they moved to the lot?
I wasn't the Burbank building.
Yes, okay, I'm jealous.
It was like a death, like there was nothing there. Like, I remember when I did the tour, like my boss gave us a tour of the whole lot and he would be like, oh, this is the box where they used to have wigs in it. Like, this is where this used to be on display.
This is where Johnny Carson harassed the secretary.
And there was this like old guy that would always be like, oh, back in my day, like this place used to be a bustle and bundle of joy and left behind.
That's an episode of 30 Rock where we get that guy and he walks through the hallways.
There was that guy on the Burbank lot.
Okay,
he was there. It was real.
Because so a big part of your job was like to give the tours constantly.
That's right.
Are there any tours that you as a page have to do when you're on the West Coast?
I never had to do a tour. They used to have to do tours and then there was nothing left
like
to tour.
Like the year before you came in, I think they stopped doing them.
Oh yeah, and thank goodness because those packets you had to memorize, we saw one of them and I was like, thank goodness I do not have to do this.
I think I know who's going to win our page off already.
It's pros and cons.
Was it ever a question? Was it ever a question?
Guys, we got to work SNL. What the hell?
Okay, yeah, that's true.
I'm just kidding. Here, let me say something though. I love Dana. She's one of my good friends too, so no real hate here. She sucks. I mean, she kind of sucks. No, but I was gonna say, when I was a East Coast page, everybody coveted the West Coast program and thought, oh my god, they're so cool, they get to work on the sitcoms. It's sunny California, it's all entertainment. And 30 Rock, like, we do have SNL, we do have Fallon, that's great. But we don't have, it's mostly like marketing, and later on we'll talk about CNBC and Paramus, New Jersey. Like, that is, a big part of 30 Rock.
Your idea that it's like, oh, these sexy West Coast pages with their sunshine and comedy. And like the idea, like the page uniform is just the bikini that Kenneth is crocheting, the peacock bikini.
Which is so funny because I remember a guy I used to work with always joked that we were like the redheaded stepchildren of the page program.
What?
Because like you guys were always on the Today Show. Like, no one ever saw the West Coast pages except for like the angry people from the Midwest who had been waiting too long in line at Leno, like who I had to deal with. Yeah. Like, and they were always like pissed about their seat or tried to take photos and you had to watch them delete the photos on their phone. Like, I had to yell at them like from across the building to not take pictures. Hey. Like, so we were always like, oh man, the East Coast pages, they get like all the time in the spotlight.
We That's spent really more funny. Time around angry Midwesterners than you did though, because we gave those stupid tours all day.
That's true.
And they were just like, where's Seinfeld shot? It's not 95 anymore.
Well, guys, I'm so pumped you're here. We're going to get started real quick. We're going to do a 30-30 because Kelsey has one, right?
30-30.
30-30. 30-30. 30-30.
Okay, so I finally saw a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. because it pops up.
I feel like we talked about this, you but no, did. Sisters. You saw it.
Yeah,
I saw it.
Yeah, you
saw
always it. See the things before me. And so I finally saw Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. And it was really funny because I took an extra day off of work and I was going through more Survivor. And then I started watching 13 Hours because, holy John Krasinski.
He got real buff in that movie. Did y'all see those posters? Jim can beat things up. Jim could have taken Roy in the first season if this is okay, what he looked like.
Roy is in 13 Hours.
I know. It's really weird. It's like the cast of The Office. I'm like,
what is happening right
Dwight's
here?
Dwight's a purple belt.
Rainn Wilson pops up in the back.
He's just like, Vietnam.
But so I was watching that, and my little sister lives in the Middle East, and I was watching this going, I need to not be watching any shows based in the Middle East. And I finished that and then jumped right into Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. I'm like, another freaking movie in this area, not a good idea. But I watched it and I enjoyed it. It definitely didn't, it was funny, but it wasn't as funny as I expected it was going to be.
Wait, okay, I'm so sorry, we're talking about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, not 13 not
hours. 13 hours was not as funny as I thought it was going to be based on their previews. I thought it was a
Benghazi
knee slapping.
It's true. See, my dad saw 13 hours and know what he said. He was like, I don't know who to vote for. That's why he saw 13 hours. It was really cute. So
but yeah, so it was good, but I just didn't, I thought it was going to be funnier than it actually was. But I don't know if it was because I started watching it right after 13 Hours that maybe that wasn't the order I should have watched those movies in.
Maybe not. It was probably too real. Yeah. Did y'all see Whiskey Tango Foxtrot?
No.
Either of you?
It's on Hulu now.
I did see it.
You did see it. Okay. You didn't like it, right?
I did not like it.
I remember because you didn't like the goat joke. I love you. Or the donkey joke.
Tina, I love you.
Do you? On my way to L.A. from Missouri, I had a car accident and was stranded in Albuquerque for 2 weeks.
Is that when they were filming it?
And they were filming it, and I knew her assistant from the Page program in New York.
Oh, did you meet up?
And we met up, and that's I had so dinner perfect. With one of the actresses and a bunch of the people that worked on it. From like, I was like, okay, this is fun.
But
I still want to see the movie.
You know what? I really like the movie. I've talked about it before. I won't go into it, but I like the movie. But I really get why not everyone relates to it. It played into a very specific experience I've had. Yeah. So I was like, I relate to this movie, but other people might not. So I get it.
Yeah.
I've said this before. Anyway,
it just wasn't as funny as I thought it was going. Like, it was a good movie. Tina was great.
Was it more of a social commentary than it was a comedy?
I would think so.
Actually, it was less of a social commentary. I think they're not trying to say anything big. I think they're just trying to say this is a weird thing that happens when you're a journalist and a war correspondent.
And I don't it's a comedy because it is, but it's not. I don't know.
It's like a dark comedy. It's like just it's maybe like a dark thoughtful comedy. Dark comedy, maybe. I don't know. Martin Freeman's adorable in it. Mm-hmm. He has a Scottish accent. I want to put him in my pocket and walk away. He's so cute. You did not respond how I hoped you would to that joke.
I appreciate the sexy voice when you break it out.
I was ready
for
it. Oh, man. Not ready for Martin Freeman? Yeah. That's fine. None of us are.
All right.
He's single now, so I have a chance. Guys, let's talk about 30 Rock. These were really good episodes this week. I'm really pumped you guys get to talk about these ones.
Yeah.
First one, Kelsey, take it away.
First one was The Collection. This was episode 3 of season 2. Air date was October 18th, 2007. Director was Don Scardino and writer was Matt Hubbard. He previously wrote Rural Juror and Hardball. Recap is Liz is learning how to handle, I wrote Angie's wife, but I meant to say Tracy's wife, Angie, with her new involvement in Tracy's life.
This is a twist I didn't see coming, right?
I have a director thing to say. For your corner.
Ooh,
sorry to interrupt you.
Mid recap, go for it.
Okay. No, for all you.
I'll take a breath.
Listen, for all my Misties out there, Mystery Science Theater fans, Don Scardino.
There's three of them.
There's none of them. Don Scardino was the star of the movie Squirm, a 70s horror film about flesh-eating worms. And that was, and that's a Mystery Science Theater
movie. It sounds like a James Gunn movie.
Yeah.
Did James. Oh, he did a different one. He did a
Guardians
worm.
Of the Galaxy.
No, he was a horror director before that.
Oh. It's funny because Squirm sounds like worm.
I know, right? I'm like, I don't want to see that.
Okay, you're my favorite comedy writer. Will is just shaking his head like, this isn't where I ended up.
No, it's my fault.
Let me continue on my recap. Kenneth
that was not a welcome contribution.
No, that was great. Kenneth is tasked with keeping Jenna fat. Jack has to get rid of part of his life in order to help him get closer to the GE presidency. And that's my recap.
Oh, man. Thank you, Kelsey, for doing that. Problem. You kept it really together as we
I tried. No, that was
we got real silly real like fast. I'm so sorry. The embarrassment and the frustration of seeing Dana and Will.
If the title of our episodes were anything other than the episode titles, I think this episode title would be called Squirm Sounds Like Worm. I'm pretty sure.
If we were Harmontown.
That's my food, child or cat.
Also, I just love how much is happening while you're talking. Will's chasing the cat with the pillow. Dana's almost
falling
out of the chair.
He's trying not to die.
This is a really chaotic episode. I love it.
This is great.
So Rosemary's Baby.
Nope. The Collection.
Wait, which one is it? The Collection. Damn, you're right. It's The Collection. Okay, I kept mixing it up.
As we talk about The Collection, just so you know, Jane Krakowski and Jack McBrayer did commentary on it. So I
Oh, they did. You have some thoughts.
I do have some thoughts. The first is that the show is filmed in Long Island City, except when they're shooting exteriors.
Oh, we've Silver been to Cup Long Studios. Island City. Remember that's where we saw that Silver went to the Cup Creek Studios. In the Cave.
Oh, this.
Oh, remember we went to that comedy show, Comedy Hell?
Fun.
That was one of the best things we did in New York. Was yeah, comedy. Everyone, go, if you live in New York, go to the Creek in the Cave. It's my favorite comedy venue there.
They were super cool. Funny.
But, you know, that's just all that has to do with this is that that's also in Long Island City.
That's awesome. It's good. It's worth it.
Guys, do you really think that Jack is an eagle but with the head of a bear? Do you think that's an accurate representation?
I think that's what he wants to be.
Yeah.
I think he's a manticore. Isn't a manticore a lion? An eagle with the head of a lion? No.
Awkward silence.
I love that that came out.
I'm a little rusty on
my... I'm googling testicle.
No. So just while she's trying to Google that, this is happening when Liz walks into the office and interrupts a moment between Jonathan and Jack. And I just love Jonathan's, "You ruin everything," as he runs out of the room in tears. And Liz gets a call from a lawyer, from someone trying to help Jack, or trying to, they're vetting Jack, basically, and asks Liz, "What type of animal do you think Jack is?" And that's her response. "An eagle with the head of a bear." And he says, "Thank you. Respect means the world to me."
Okay, I was wrong. A manticore is a dragon with the head of a lion. So I think that's
a
actually
dragon?
More. It's like a dragonish thing. It's not fully a dragon, but it looks like a dragon. It's got like a scorpion tail and bat wings. So I'm just saying dragon. Anyway, we're
is it
done.
Three different animals then?
Yeah, it's like five. It's made. It's from Iran. They're very creative,
you know,
there.
I think I would agree if she had said that he was an eagle with the head of a teddy bear.
Oh, a teddy bear. Why?
Because I feel accurate. Like Jack has a soft side to him.
He definitely does.
So that I agree with. And an eagle is still a fierce creature, which he is as well.
But bear just sounds a little more manly.
But bear just sounds, I mean, it just, I don't know. He needs a little love in there.
It's a very American creature for sure, too, which definitely fits
you.
Him. Well
he is very American.
She is all American.
This is Comcast.
Oh, my goodness.
So you know how in episode one of season two, how Liz walks in and says, "Ooh, did you redecorate?"
Yeah.
Jane Krakowski says, "If you're a big fan of the show, you'll notice that Jack's office got a big renovation."
So he did redecorate. Yep. It looked exactly the same as season one.
But I don't think it did. Have you gone back through and watched a season one episode?
No, but my memory says.
Because I said that it looked different. I said that it looked different.
I believe you. I'm just like, I'm really like, wow, it looks so different. And I'm like, does it look so different? Does it look so different?
It looks, it looks different the way where, like, if you painted your living room, like, okay, it's the same, but also there's different colors in here.
Oh, okay, whatever. I'm impressed. Do you know who Brooke Astor is? I was trying to figure that out.
She's like a socialite in New York, and she just had died in August of 2007. You're jumping all over the place.
I'm
Dana
sorry.
And Will are very confused. So first, hang on. There's back in Jack's office, Jack comments that he's hired a private investigator to help dig a stuff up. I wrote, not Jean Parmesan.
Oh, wouldn't that have been a great crossover?
Amazing.
But then again, we wouldn't have had Steve Buscemi, and Steve Buscemi is like the best thing in this episode.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like when Jack pretends that he gets a phone call to get Liz out of his office. I think it's just the best.
That's a bomb business move.
It's like,
really
ring, ring. Yes, she's right here. What else is going on? And that's just typical Jack.
It's really professional.
It's funny because it's bad space work.
Wait, explain.
Well, because he's holding the phone, it's like he's making a phone instead of holding a phone. You know what I mean?
Oh.
So if you're doing space work holding a phone,
improv,
you're holding it versus making a phone with your hand. I mean, and Jack Donaghy, whatever, but it's funny because it's like, oh.
Can't you see Alec Baldwin doing snow pants though and getting schooled?
Mm-hmm.
I watched that.
Okay, so in the commentary, Jane goes, "Tina loves the fake phone idea," and Jack says, "No, that's a real phone. Alec had a bionic hand transplant for this episode."
Wait,
excellent.
Oh, that's really funny. You meant Jack McBrayer,
Jack McBrayer,
but I got confused.
Yes. Sorry, yeah.
I don't have the DVDs. Does he break character is he just like Kenneth, right?
When he's
Jack
doing
McBrayer.
The commentary, a little bit. Yeah, he's a little bit more.
Just a nice
he doesn't start giggling a ton. Like every now and then he does. When the first commentary he did, he broke a little bit. But this, he was just talking with Jane. He was a little calmer and more subdued, it felt like.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then the reference you were talking about, Brooke Astor, was that Angie shows up. And he's like, "What? You're here on time or whatever?" And she's got this giant ring on her finger, and she goes, "Bling bling, ghetto, fabulous."
Things Liz says.
And then she says, "This belonged to Brooke Astor." That's where that came from.
Brooke Astor, classy.
Yeah.
So she's a New York socialite. She died in, like, and you when you look up her Wikipedia page, she literally has these just giant diamonds and everything.
This is the best because I don't have to look up things anymore. Oh, Kelsey will look up who Brooke Astor is. This makes my life easy.
These references are great, even if you don't get them. That's
no, it's just really funny.
But they're so dated.
They're really
and now they're very dated.
The show is aging slowly. Colleen Shirley.
I think we get one of my favorite lines right after that is when Angie tries to recruit Liz to help control Tracy, and she's, oh, you're looking for a sassy black friend? Because you got one now, girlfriend.
The twist in that, that like uncomfortable
the panic on Liz's face as she realized, oh my gosh, she thinks that this is, oh, it's okay. All
right,
cool.
And then Liz is like really like honky tonk moves right there when she's like dancing as like as Angie is like really excited. She like just like she just like body shuffles really awkwardly.
Yes,
it's so funny.
Typical Liz.
But I feel like, okay, I might give myself a little bit of hot water by saying this. That's like every white woman when we feel like we may have said something that's
absolutely.
We're like, hey, okay, I maybe said something wrong, but I'm not sure. But I love you, and I want to be racially appropriate right
it's
now.
So accurate.
And I could laugh or cry,
and I could laugh. We're crying. I don't know how you're gonna respond, so I'm gonna shake my shoulders like this.
It felt like kind of like a spoof of that white guilt kind of.
Oh, it is, and that's literally all Liz is a lot of. She's white guilt with glasses. Like it's a huge part of who she is, which is what's so funny about her because she gets herself in such hot water all the time.
She was talking about Barack Obama, and then she says, "We support Kucinich."
Yes,
and Dennis Kucinich was a. Like, he ran in the Democratic primary, and he was, like, this short, very white liberal guy who believed in aliens.
Mm-hmm. I know. My friends in high school were all really into Dennis Kucinich. They had T-shirts. That's the kind of people I hung out with in high school.
He was kind of, like, the goofy candidate. So I thought it was funny that Tracy supported Dennis Kucinich.
And wouldn't support
the guy
support
that claims
Obama.
He was, like, in a UFO.
Well, maybe this would go along with his Practicology
it's
and
true.
The Alien King.
That lives inside Stan Lee. Yes. Oh, you guys haven't seen that episode yet, huh?
Sorry.
No, I was gonna say that just happened. They build on this whole like Scientologist religion where there's an alien king. The religion is made by the alien king that lives within Stan Lee. It's a running thing. I shouldn't have explained it. It's funnier on the show.
I like it. We also get one of my other favorite lines is when Kenneth walks up with a bucket of fan mail for Jenna, and she's like, "Are there any from prisoners?" Like. Federal. Yes, not just those state prisons. I got some federal prisoner fan mail right here for you. One more, and we can give me one. Was that when she popped up on screen, Jane Krakowski made a comment. She's like, "That is a fat suit, just so you know, that's a fat suit." And Jack McBrayer's like, nope, it's not. And she commented that this was literally the first time ever in her life she had hired a personal trainer and worked out every single day for 30 days. And then she gets a call from Tina Fey saying, "By the way, we're putting you in a fat suit." And she's like, really?
I know. And again, it's the weirdest fat suit, too. It only sticks. It's literally, they just put a thing that connects around her middle. Like, her legs are the same, her face and her like upper body's the same. It's just right under her chest to her hips.
It's bizarre.
It's the strangest fat suit. I mean, she looks real. The whole time, I'm like, she still looks really good. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why they wanted to lose weight.
Yep. I just saw The Devil Wears Prada.
Mm-hmm.
And they're calling Anne Hathaway the fat girl the whole time. I'm like, what the hell?
Isn't that crazy?
She's wearing a fat suit in that movie when she's
shut up. Is she really?
Like, no.
Skinny in that movie.
No, okay. They start off. So what they did is they were first going to have her, like, she decided to gain weight, and they decided they just want to do a fat suit so she'd lose the weight. And she got to. So she's in the skinny part of that movie. She's that skinny the whole movie, and they just put, like, layers, extra, like, fat suit
unhealthy.
Layers on her. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
I know. It's kind of gross.
This and turning it into a Devil Wears Prada.
Yes. I'm really into that. Can we eat like 2 cubes of cheese every episode?
I'm like, we've made Devil's Wears Prada jokes before.
Which I just realized that's written by Aileen Brosh McKenna, who writes mm-hmm. Crazy Girlfriend. I didn't put the two of those together.
Oh my God.
Anyway,
so
now it really is the Devil Wears Prada podcast anyway.
Right. So we get Steve Buscemi.
No, wait, did we skip Enor May?
Oh, we did.
Her amazing. I love that thing. She goes, "Can't plus size women wear normal perfume?"
So good. But that
make
commercial,
him chase the chunk.
It's good.
Put it on while menstruating.
I know. That was the weirdest thing. You can only wear this perfume 21 not, days out of the month.
It means it's like just all pheromones. Like, what is in that? It's so funny. But that name, Enor May, it's such a good perfume name.
Gross. So then we get Jack's private investigator, Lenny Wozniak, aka Steve Buscemi. That's like private investigator's name, Lenny Wozniak.
I thought the cinematography of the scene was interesting because I felt like, and it felt a little more noir. Like, they kind of bleached it a little bit and gave it like kind
they
of
also
faded tones.
Weird angles. Like, when you get Steve Buscemi, and I don't know if it's in this one or the next time we see him in the same spot, like they're above instead of straight on. It was very bizarre.
They kind of like the director had some fun and made it a little more noir, which is what this whole Steve Buscemi thing is kind of an old timey conceit, but it's super interesting.
They Jack and Jane went up the hill. That's not the right names. They made a joke about how, like, now that they have Steve Buscemi, that they can get independent movie credit. They're like, "We're not a movie or independent, but I feel like with him in it, that gives us the credit for it."
And I mean, that's reasonable. I just watched The Big Lebowski for the first time this week, and so I was really fun watching him in this episode and just thinking of him as dear old Donnie.
Right. Lenny, he finds some skeletons in Jack's closet that he talks about. So the first was the 1976 Democratic Convention. So that's what Jack confesses to, and that
isn't that like a running joke on the show?
Do you guys get?
I don't know
Kelsey
if she had recorded.
And I had like a little scuffle about Gerald Ford or Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, so okay, so the 1976 Democratic Convention, Jack was there beating up hippies because we know that Jack is very conservative. So he was at the Democratic Convention, and we were trying to figure out why he was there, and I commented it was because Reagan was at the Republican Convention that year, and Will tried to correct me that
throat.
No, that was Gerald Ford. I'm like, yes, he won the nomination, but the convention, Reagan and Ford were both
keep
there.
Mixing all your Republicans.
Well, because Nixon's a joke made in the next episode, so that's why my brain's there.
Well, isn't oh yeah, they do a lot of Nixon jokes in the next episode. But wait, isn't that like a running thing on this show that Jack was a closet like Democrat for a while and then became a Republican to do well in business?
At one point, yeah, there's something because when he and yeah, that's later great. On there's some weird joke about that.
Yeah, but. Like it's like a weird running thing because it's so great too because it plays into Alec Baldwin's persona like slightly. I just love this idea that Jack used to be like hardcore blue.
So that was the first skeleton that Jack confessed to. The next, his brother Eddie sells faulty sprinkler systems at elementary
no
schools.
One's surprised by that.
And that his cousin Tim fixed NBA games, which is there was at this time there in August of 2007 there was an NBA ref named Tim Donaghy who was he pled guilty to two charges of betting on games and making calls.
Shut up,
the point
it's real.
Oh my
God. Real?
That they catered, they were like, ooh, Tim Donaghy, and they pulled that in.
That is so
real.
Ridiculous.
Isn't that amazing? And then his mother is an Olympic level racist and the rest of you don't do anything unless getting kicked out of a Chili's counts.
I love that you look these things up, and I mean that. I'm not trying to be a dick.
I think that Tim Donaghy is the best research thing you've found yet on this show. I'm not even joking. That is cool. Because you could just see one of them writers reading in the newspaper and just like running in and being like, we're
Donaghy,
using this.
Donaghy, Donaghy.
We're using this. Oh my gosh. That's so weird. Yeah. I thought that was such a throwaway line.
Nope. It's an actual person.
For like the two people who knew that news story, who like freaked out and watched the show, that like Venn diagram is so small.
Connection.
Oh, goodness. Well, isn't there a bit where Tracy starts talking about animals? That's what I wrote next.
The cobra. That's like because Cobra was sick and he took him to the vet.
No.
You can't ask a bird not to fly. You can't ask a fish not to swim. You can't ask a tiger not to turn back into a Chinese dude at midnight.
That's a great line.
And his hand motions while he's, you can't ask a fish not to, as I'm doing hand motions on podcast. It's great.
I love that line. Tracy's weird concept of reality is always delightful.
It's so great. But also the.
Is that like a Big Trouble Little China thing?
The Chinese man?
Mm-hmm. The tiger? I only saw half that movie.
You know what's funny? I read Chinese Dude at Midnight. All it made me think of is like Chinese New Year and the guy. I saw Tiger and I imagined Dragon is my
We're
problem.
On Netflix, everybody.
I started on Netflix. And then
because of the movie Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon? Because that's what I thought of.
Have you seen that movie? Because no one turns into a tiger in that movie either.
Oh,
I know. But you never saw that movie. I only watched half of Big Trouble Little China. So we're really making this work.
We're really doing a lot.
We're killing it. I stopped watching that because you came home and I decided I was bored.
Reference to the terrible NBC sitcom Manimal. I'm not kidding. That's
Wait,
a real.
What's Manimal?
What everybody listening to this podcast, look that show up.
Manimal.
What's Manimal?
Manimal
or Manimal?
It's what? Manimal.
Okay.
Like Manimal.
It sounds like a
Animorph toy.
NBC would have you forget this show ever existed.
Explain Manimal, please.
It's a show about a guy that fights crime by turning into animals at nighttime.
It's amazing.
It's like I will post the picture and you guys can put it on your...
Please do.
Okay, it's definitely a Manimal reference. That's the one I like the most. We got this wrong. You got this right.
Like
Will wins.
I don't know if I'm...
Yeah, 100%.
The other thing that I liked was Tracy saying, I've been reading the newspaper to get some sketches. This week, can we do business section? Which I feel like Jack Donaghy would be like, yes, we will find a way to make that a sketch.
Doing business section.
There was a Jackie Mason reference, who is a yes. star of Caddyshack 2.
Oh, that's okay.
There's a Caddyshack 2?
That classic.
I didn't know Caddyshack had a sequel.
Let's not talk
I think
about
that's.
Oh man,
that's the joke. Yeah. I think
maybe.
Right now.
Oh, was it a joke?
No, it's
okay.
A real movie, and Jackie
I got lost.
Mason does star in it. He kind of.
What
like
else is Jackie Mason?
Rodney
he's
Mason.
Just one of those names. I'm like, oh yeah,
he's
Jackie
comedian,
Mason.
Yeah.
I know he's like an
comedian.
NBC comedian.
Yeah.
His ethnicity doesn't matter, Will.
But that was part of his shtick, though. Was kind of like, oh, like that was. Now I'm racist. Now I'm really racist.
I can cut this out.
That is how
he
sounded.
In the scene when Jack walks into Jenna's room and he's like, "You're not breathing heavily. Your skin is cleared up. I even find you slightly attractive right now." Don't say that.
I know that that little moment is beautiful.
Jane said that Alec had the hardest time not laughing during that scene. that he just kept breaking and like they couldn't stop us.
She's great in that scene. Like he's always good, but she is so funny in this episode. Yeah. I think this is a great Jane episode.
I think I'm glad because like there were a couple episodes in the last season where Jenna was just missing and I like that find like, okay, bring her back, which is also interesting because like this episode is missing Pete. So they do. And also Josh is just gone at this point for a little bit.
Oh,
he's
yeah,
mentioned
he hasn't
in the
been
next
in a
one.
While.
He's not in, and there's no Frank in this episode.
No writers,
oh, yeah,
yeah.
No hats. Okay. The writers,
the writers
are,
just absent.
They're just
episodes.
Gone. Yeah. Yeah. No, the one thing I want to say about Jenna, I Jane Krakowski is so talented and funny, but they often really rely on her doing just saying ridiculous things. Mm-hmm. And that's not her funniest to me. It seems like this where she's playing, they like do some warped reality where she's playing very sincerely within it. That's where she kills that every single yeah. time. She does that a lot later when they bring in her boyfriend, Paul.
Yes.
They play really well yes. with like role reversals and like warped reality. It's really funny.
My favorite genuinely moment in Kimmy Schmidt is when Jane Krakowski and Carol the Kane mm-hmm. are in the car and it's like I've never known how to do anything myself before, and it's not like funny, it's just she plays it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like she plays that goofy character but she is actually saying something real. So
yeah,
to your point.
No, exactly, she's so good. Wait, okay, I wanted to say there was a do we pass the scene where he's talking about strippers?
Where
Tracy's talking about strippers? I had something I wanted to talk about.
Where he's going
that.
To the strip club?
Yeah, he's going to strip club.
As soon as he knows Angie's gone.
Yeah.
The strip club?
Yeah, no, because we... Okay, I want to go back to that scene real quick.
Oh, where he wants to get, like, booby slapped by a Russian slipper or whatever. A slipper.
Stripper. Sounds luxurious when you say it like that.
Right?
No, I find that interesting. He says, like, a coked-out Russian stripper,
yeah.
right? I think that's interesting because I find that to be a weirdly feminine... Like, even their stripper jokes are slightly feminist idea because it's not a sexy image. This idea of strippers, like, this beautiful mm-hmm. thing. It's like, she's coked out, like, all these things. Even there's something... They're really hard... How do I say this? The joke is never at a place where, like, this is a really healthy, lovely thing. Like, they're always really hard on the world
yeah.
of strippers and stuff, which I find slightly feminist. I like
yeah.
The female writers can't hold back. They're like, ah, these poor women, even when they write jokes about strippers. And I find that kind of interesting.
I like that.
Probably overreading into it, but that's what I kept thinking about.
That's good.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Good talk.
Somebody
good talk.
Has to say smart stuff.
I have to say one feminist thing in this each podcast episode. Otherwise, they take away my card.
I haven't gotten my card yet.
I've been excited to discuss my favorite line in this episode, which is when Jack says that he can't take the ceramics to Albany.
Oh, yeah,
cold.
Because the
Thanks, man. They're living, breathing things. Jonathan.
Yep. Okay. So yeah. So one of the things that Steve Buscemi finds out about Jack is the skeleton that he really finds is that he is a collector of cookie jars, which is great. Which I was trying to see if there was an international cookie jar convention, and the closest thing I found was that on March 27, 2015, there was a reunion convention for a pottery collector society, and the theme was the Great American Cookie Jar.
Oh my goodness.
Hope you somehow solve a murder through these fact searches someday.
Oh my God. Like, it becomes like one of those boards with like red yarn going over it, connecting all these moments. The 30 Rock killer. We just become my favorite murderer, pretty much.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, goodness.
I don't remember where this goes in.
but your notes were so detailed.
Was when Jane says she has her deal to play Mrs. Pac-Man.
Oh, Sorry. My gosh. I know.
It's like by far my favorite out
it's
of all.
It's a great line.
Closer to reality now than ever before.
I know, right? With the Angry Birds movie.
Like, yeah. After that, what was the movie that... Where the video games came to attack people?
Wreck-It Ralph, right?
No, there was
that Adam Sandler movie.
Pixel. I feel like that would have been the movie
she
would have
been in.
She would have been in Pixel.
Mrs.
She would have been Mrs. Pac-Man
and
in Pixel.
She just yells, "Me want food," and chases everyone. Oh my goodness.
On the topic of collections, have you guys ever collected anything weird?
Beatles stuff.
Weirdo.
Yeah, I know.
I collect rocks from places I go.
Rocks.
I have jars of rocks from New Zealand and like the Grand Canyon and weird stuff like that.
Have you ever collected anything, Dan?
I don't know if this is
NBC pins.
A collection. Other than NBC pins, but I cannot. If someone writes me a note that has any sentimental value, I can't throw it away.
Yep.
Like I literally have a box, like a large, like probably the length of my body box underneath my bed, just
full of notes from people, and I can't throw them away. Like, I can't do it. Yep. It's a problem.
One of these days, I'm going to make a Ken Burns style documentary, just reading the letters like they do in Civil War, and doing like those panning over photos
like
of you.
Like violin music and the fiddle music in the background.
I know. Yeah. Just panning. And just like the dramatic readings of the letters. I'm going to do that with all of your sentimental notes. It'll be like
a gift
to you. It was
always better when they wrote out the letter. Not when they typed it.
So I have three weird things that I've collected.
Oh my gosh, Kelsey. Ooh.
Well, so the last one's really weird. So the first one is sunglasses. If you know me, I have an unhealthy amount of sunglasses.
You do have a lot of sunglasses.
Over 100 pairs of sunglasses. I have a drawer in my dresser just full of sunglasses.
$5, not like the kind you buy on the street.
Oh yeah, not like Oakley's. I go to Target and I can't not buy one.
Imagine you went with Oakley's. Yes, the expensive ones. Not Ray-Bans.
Yeah, right. The second thing that they're all at my parents' house still, but I have a ton of Archie comic books. Ton of them. They're just on the shelf in my parents' house. So the last thing that I collected, and I don't collect them anymore, I threw them all away, is I went through like 2 years of collecting car rims.
What? Wait, I'm sorry, Kelsey. I remember that we'd pull over. Oh my gosh, I remember we'd pull over on like streets and you'd grab them. I never put it together though. I never realized that was what was happening.
I literally had, I probably had 30 car rims that would just sit.
Will is just shaking his head.
It's the weirdest thing. It started with like literally like a drive to LAX and like hopping on the car and picking one up and being like, we saw one earlier in that other bush and going to get that. And like for my birthday,
Kelsey, that's not normal.
I know. For my birthday, when my oldest sister literally came in a present bag was a car rim that she had found on. I would get pictures from friends saying, thought of you. And it's like a car rim on the side of the road.
What did you do with all of them?
I know. It like filled up our entire trash can 1 week. That was the weirdest thing I've ever collected. And hopefully the last.
That was great. Thanks, guys.
Anything else about this episode? I'm trying to think.
I had a couple of things I want to say. First of all, when Angie's pitching, she goes, Grizz is... .com is so pitching excited. A sketch. It's Mars and there's a Civil War soldier. He's pitching John Carter on Mars, isn't he?
I think so.
Isn't that the plot of John Carter on Mars? A Civil War soldier ends up on Mars and has to fight a war? Whatever. I was just like really thrown out on that. I really liked, this is the first time we hear my mom's friend, Ron.
Yes.
First time he's
the
mentioned.
First, not the last.
Running character. He shows up like, what, season 6?
Mm-hmm.
I won't go into who he is.
I know, right?
I'll tell you guys after this.
It's great.
It's great. Great guest star. So that's like a running thing of how angry Kenneth, the only time you ever see Kenneth angry is when he talks about his mom's friend, Ron, which is great. They go do their paperwork. It's so adorable.
I also get the great line, sorry, that you're beginning to think like a businessman, a businesswoman.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm so glad. I don't think that's a word.
That's not a word.
A businesswoman. Also, when Ken's like, so me and Jenna have to get married now.
I know.
Did they have sex?
No, it's because the way she kissed him.
I know, but I'm wondering
that he thinks that.
Because in the biblical sense for Kenneth.
I know, right, that's what I was thinking.
Kenneth thinks that's a big deal. Also, they were talking, because like with the two of them doing the commentary, Jane was like, I've never kissed somebody before, or I've never licked somebody before.
Oh yeah, she went for it.
Yeah,
that poor
and Jack goes, welcome to the world of herpes, McBrayer.
And then I really like that bit where he's talking about, he just says, Jack, that cookie jar says mom. He goes, I always like to think of it as an upside down wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he goes on to his whole thing. It's like, so to answer your question, I give cookie jars about a B. I think it's just so stinking cute. And when he's telling that story about why he likes cookie jars, McBrayer kept saying, watch my eyebrows. And his eyebrows go crazy during that story. And then he also comments that as you're watching it, the door in the background is open, 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 open. And then when he stands up, it's closed. And so he has to open it. And so he's like, watch it, watch it, watch it. And you can see it. It was
great.
Oh, interesting.
Somebody didn't pay
attention. That scene is also where he goes, tell Patty and Beth and Nancy that.
Oh, yeah.
Vic Nightingale. Says hello. I love that he has these relationships with these ladies that collect cookie jars.
It's so sad.
It's and really
then
charming.
When he just turns the GE logo at the end, it's like, are you happy now, you son of a bitch?
Did anyone else think the GE logo was going to wink at him? Am I weird? I kept waiting for that surrealist moment where the logo would be like, yeah.
Again, this is not the Polar Express. I've had to explain this twice in this podcast.
Damn it. I want to say, though, I think that last scene with Kenneth, with Jack, is really, again, we talk a lot. How do I say this? Basically, it's another moment where Kenneth and Jack are seen as actually being quite similar in a way that will then play out in the future, right? Mm-hmm. That just in the way that Jack, you know, he's this titan of industry, da da da, but he has this weird affinity for these cookie jars. Kenneth also has these weird affinity for cookie jars. So there might be other things about Kenneth that's similar to Jack. Mm-hmm. And I think they keep slowly knitting their futures as they build who Kenneth is going to become, which we'll get there. But I just thought that was another
pages
moment
are
of like
run the company someday.
Mm-hmm. Right. Dead by his hand.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why Jack has the head of a teddy bear.
Aww. Aww. Oh, I wrote the wow cookie jar. It makes it straight up looks like something that Winnie the Pooh would be holding.
It does look like a Winnie the Pooh cookie jar.
100%.
It definitely is.
It should have honey in it.
What's a favorite line?
I had a bunch of
the living
lines.
Breathing jars for me.
I think the businesswoman line for me, where Jack's like, I don't think that's a word.
That's, I think one other of my favorite scenes in this is when Liz is trying to cover for Tracy that he was at the strip club. And so she's talking to Angie, and then Angie asks Tracy, saying, what did Liz Lemon say you were doing? And Liz acting in the background and Tracy just getting
and
it.
And he gets it.
And then it suddenly goes, and then I stuck my thumb up my, like, no, Tracy. But it was so good in that moment.
It was
so
great. Close. Dana, do you have a favorite moment or line?
I already said mine.
Oh,
deal to play Mrs. Pac-Man.
Yes.
Oh, you did say that. That is a good one.
Star student, am I right?
Yeah. You're so good at this.
My favorite line in this podcast is Dana saying, wait, what's that movie where the video games attack people and come to life?
Oh, what a world we live in that's a movie.
Oh, my goodness.
Ready for the second episode?
Let's do second episode.
Hey, Carrie Fisher.
Oh, I literally have written Carrie Fisher. Sorry. Sad face. Oh.
I started out with four sad faces.
You wrote that now. You wrote that now. You didn't write that then. That's new.
That's a different pen.
You wrote that right now.
I did. I wrote that before we started.
Okay, good for you. I just like
because I wanted
now.
To like.
But
this
you only
so
wrote
sad.
Carrie Fisher. I don't think you needed to write it to remember it.
I know, but don't mock my note taking.
I literally just wrote four sad faces.
Oh, it was really sad. Rosemary's Baby, take it away.
All right. So Rosemary's Baby, air date was October 25th, 2007. Writer Jack Burda and director was Michael Engler. Recap. Tracy discovers he has some unresolved daddy issues that Jack helps him face. Jenna and Kenneth have to work through the politics of the Page program, and Liz meets her idol, and what initially seems amazing quickly goes in a downward spiral. This is the Carrie Fisher episode.
This is the Page Off episode.
Or is that what we're going to call it instead of the Carrie Fisher?
I think Carrie Fisher is more important. I'm sorry. I know.
It's really hard. The Page Off, which is why we have... this is going to be a very hostile episode.
I'm Kenneth.
I will proudly be Paul Scheer. I would be the one that's like, no, you put your jacket. Go to New Jersey.
Can I say something about New Jersey?
Yes.
That is, I had an assignment. It's Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey.
Okay.
See, I'm going to correct. See, I can all correct right, things
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well done.
Okay. And that was a real thing where like they were great assignments, but you had to get on a bus. I almost said effing bus.
Oh, you had to go through the Lincoln Tunnel?
You had to
tunnel?
Get on a shuttle and go across the bridge and spend the entire day at Englewood Cliffs. So that's a real thing pages do.
Gross.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, that's man.
Okay. I had a,
do they have
a
like NBC
there.
Theme bus for you guys to take? Like a
no,
shuttle?
No,
like,
it was
like
a white shuttle
Apple?
Driven by a guy who didn't speak English. So it was definitely
oh, poor thing.
Not, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like the West Coast Page equivalent of this was that there was one assignment in the Wilshire building.
Yes.
That sounds so that's nice though versus like Englewood Cliffs,
I know,
New Jersey.
It was much
oh,
nicer.
The
I'm
sure
mile.
Everyone who had that assignment, I think
next
actually
to
liked
LACMA.
It. But I feel like that
that's
was my
so
only
funny.
Relevant yeah. additional point to this.
Exactly.
I want to say something.
Yeah.
The show, the episode starts out, we get a Frank hat since he was gone last time called that says field hockey coach. And Liz is getting a fellowship award, which she was bummed about, and then she gets $10,000 with it, so she's happy about it.
Oh, I love that joke so much. That whole bit, how immediately she just breaks, I accept this for followers everywhere.
Right.
And then I love how it says the like the note on the check, what does it say? It says like
it says I wrote it down later on.
It's
there.
With an M. It starts with an M. Mindless following.
There we go. Yep.
Mindless following is the note on the check, which is amazing.
Yep.
This episode deals with so much, like the whole idea of like how much is it worth it to fight for your ideals, and like what do you do with an old hippie? Like, there's so many really interesting ideas going
and,
in this.
And
show.
Women, pioneer women in
oh,
the writing world.
Yep.
Definitely plays on that.
You're my kid, Liz Lemon. Oh, you're my kid
which,
that never
okay.
calls. It's just so heartbreakingly
all,
funny.
I have. Again, we've had this issue before where I don't understand the titles of a show and what they're about. Like Jack Tor is not a dinosaur. That it, like every single time I watch the episode, I think I realize like why is it called Rosemary's Baby? And then I get to the end and realize like oh right, because her name's Rosemary, she thinks of Liz as her child. But I never understand every single time I forget that's why it's named that.
You know, there's a movie called Rosemary's Baby too, right?
Oh, maybe that's why. Jack
well, no, it's a play on things. Yeah, it's a Meryl Streep film about she's in. I've never seen it. She's in a concert. Is it Meryl Streep?
No, it's who is it?
Mia Farrow.
You're right. I'm
Roman Polanski.
I'm I'm mixing it up with Sophie's Choice.
Right
I'm
now.
Mixing it up with Sophie's Choice. That's definitely what just happened.
They're
I do know.
Very different know. Movies as well.
I was really about to be like, she's in a concentration camp and she has to choose one child to live. God. I was about to go into that. You're so mad at me.
Rosemary's Baby. Great movie. Is she
I've never seen Rosemary's Baby. I've heard about it on You Must Remember That.
Bring it over. It.
We'll watch it. It'll be great.
We then get Jenna accidentally. She's eating. She lost all the weight. She's eating a carrot with ranch and flings ranch on accident on Kenneth's page coat, page jacket. And then she throws the jacket on a thing and burns his page jacket. And then you just get Kenneth yelling, "Oh God, it hurts!"
The way he like cringes, that like hard cut right there too was so amazing.
So
it's really funny.
And then it comes right back into Liz Lemon meeting one of her idols, Rosemary Howard.
Did you guys just want to cry though seeing
yes.
her?
Yes.
It was just, she's so beautiful. We didn't appreciate her. We didn't treasure her enough as a people.
It's very true.
I feel like that about a lot of celebrities that like die young because you like take them for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're just like, oh, she'll be here for all the next couple of Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Carrie.
Did you guys like get into the wormhole of reading a bunch of interviews with her after she passed?
Watching all of her interviews that she's done, that she's, oh my gosh.
She's so weird and funny. Yep. And reading her like story about how she and Harrison Ford had an affair.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Did you guys read it? It was real good. It was real interesting. I know
she
what you're doing
saying,
later.
She
you look sad.
I just affairs are sad.
I know. I know.
And I know
she
it's
was
like
19.
Supposed to be this romantic ideal.
No, it was like really painful for her.
Yeah,
it's not a romantic ideal. It's just like really painful.
But I feel like maybe people saw it as a romantic ideal.
I know, because
like,
everyone wanted to believe that they loved each other, but it was like this really brutal thing. Ugh, right. It's so sad. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. It's painful. He was married, so that
he was married.
Gross.
It's just sad.
Harrison.
So Liz just goes very Liz about meeting Rosemary Howard. I think she does Rosemary Howard what I think we always try and suppress to do when you meet an idol, and she just goes for it and just, oh my goodness, and I just loved her. You're gonna kill me, aren't you? Just yeah, so great.
That was good.
This was another thing though, it was because like this situation cannot actually exist, because this happens earlier with Wayne Brady where they reference Wayne Brady, then he shows up as another character. We know already how much Liz loves Star Wars, and then Carrie Fisher shows up and there's nothing. And it just, I think it's interesting that Rosemary cannot actually exist in this universe.
No, oh, no, I agree. What? How could she not exist in
like
this
Carrie
universe?
Fisher playing Rosemary can't exist just
because they've referenced it, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, because Carrie,
right.
She should see Carrie else. Fisher and see Princess Leia, not
the
Carrie
same
Fisher.
Wayne Brady Paul. I get you. I get you.
It doesn't bump me as much, I guess.
Oh, it only bumps me when I really, really think about it.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to.
Like,
oh,
sorry, go ahead.
Oh no! I was gonna say, I was curious what you guys thought, because there's that bit where they're complaining and Rosemary is telling a story in the diner about how like someone sexually abused her or whatever, or like sexually harassed her on the set of Happy Days.
Yeah.
And I was really curious what you guys thought. What did that? And I think it was Howard was
Ron
my
Howard.
Guess. No, not Ron oh. Howard. Howard.
The bar.
The dad. No, the dad. Oh, that was my money.
Tom Bosley.
Tom Bosley.
That's so sad.
Thanks, Will.
No, I actually have another old TV reference. We've got to talk about this. She said, "I wanted to be Samantha Stevens from Bewitched."
Yes.
But I ended up being married to a gay guy. That is a reference to Dick Sargent, the actor who replaced Dick York as Darren, who was horribly miscast.
Mm-hmm.
He was good friends with the actress Elizabeth Montgomery.
Uh-huh.
I'm so lonely. And and that's why she referenced, because he was gay. And
also because Carrie Fisher, Billy Lord's dad,
is now
left
gay.
Carrie Fisher for a man.
So it was like a double.
Yep.
Oh my God.
It was, I was, yeah. I know that, because wow. I didn't know that. Faces. And then now I watched it again knowing that. I was like, oh,
yep.
There's a lot of levels.
There's a Mike Vick reference in this episode,
oh.
All the dog fighting stuff. And this was all happening right after all the stuff about Mike Vick and dog fighting.
Michael Vick's like playing football again. Like everyone forgave him, which I feel a little weird
it
about.
It still gets referenced though.
Yeah. Oh no. Everyone remembers that he did that. Now he does. I had to research a lot of dog fighting stuff for work. Like that's a weird sentence, but basically like he's still super involved in like the NFL. And now he does a lot of dog fighting, like money raising. It's weird. I have weird feelings about it. I don't know why we get to put these people. It's one thing to forgive. It's another to be like, you deserve all the money and fame again, even when you abused a bunch of things.
That's true.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. That's my soapbox for the day. I want to get to the page off real quick while we still have you guys. So that like intense rivalry obviously is ridiculous, but is there, you've talked a bit about how the page program is a bit competitive. Like, is there that sense of competition, obviously in a less extreme manner?
If you screwed up
no?
your jacket, what happened?
I don't know. Like, there's like this weird like sub universe of the pages that they obviously exploit for entertainment purposes, but did any of it ring true?
I don't know. I felt like, yes, you like the nature of the program is you compete with one another for positions, but I felt like at the end of the day, like we all still were friends and like hung out. Like, I felt like more like, oh, I got like 50 new friends moving to LA, being in the page program, rather than like
page off. Although I think it's funny.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and just throw this. I think out here, it's probably a nicer vibe in New York. Seriously, it's very type A and very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
That's just
New York.
Yeah, and in New York, you get a lot of kids that have only lived on the East Coast. And they're not from all over. They're from like the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And they kind of have that determination.
Interesting.
I do think, but I've met a lot of West Coast pages who are just really chill.
We chill, man. We chill.
That's what you guys bring. It's a West Coast, Best Coast. Am I right?
Hey,
right? Sorry, dude. I'm neutral. I'm neutral. I'm a neutral party. Look at you, like, pulling
West
your
Coast,
hair.
West Coast, West Coast.
Kimmy plays to both of us like Lady Macbeth.
I accept that. You mean a strong woman in a theatrical role? Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Damn spot.
All right. Say something, though. I have to say this.
Yes. Say something.
Everybody in the East Coast program is nice, and we are friends. I didn't mean to say it. Everybody's an asshole that competes. We don't actually do that.
No, I definitely get it.
There is a competitive, spirit.
NBC will never hire you anymore.
Yeah, I know.
You just
I
talk too much. No, I'm kidding. They will. You're wonderful. You're very talented. So I throw my notebook. All right, guys. We know you both have to go. So real quick, I want to do a page off. All right. We're going to have you compete because we didn't get a page off in this episode, so we're providing one here. Now,
and
we came up with... We came up with real NBC trivia. That's probably very easy.
Let's go. Let's go.
Okay. All right, guys. What year was NBC founded?
1932.
You broke all the rules, but you're also wrong.
Wait, that's wrong. Yeah. It's
Dana, 1909.
No, no goodness.
Whoa.
I'm intrigued. These are harder than I thought.
Right.
1919. No, it's like 1926.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get the point.
Okay, I'm just going to say this. You're the one that memorized all the facts of the two of us. Of course you're going to know more.
I know. That's when he said that. When he said, like, oh, I did a tour. And like, we don't do tours anymore. I was like, oh, it's going to be real clear. All right. Who was NBC founded by? What corporation?
It was actually RCA, right?
All right. Well,
it was RCA.
Sarnoff.
All right.
It was like a blue and red channel.
You would have been the cutest tour guy. I'm just saying that. I would have gone on that tour.
She's cuter than I am. That's definitely, she has that going.
Okay, guys. Next question. The three headquarters, where are they located?
Oh,
Dana.
Burbank.
Three.
No,
I said three headquarters.
I know. You said three.
So name three of them.
I know I am.
Okay.
30 Rock.
One more.
I'm thinking of Discovery Rock. I think it's Silver Spring.
Oh, no.
So all we right. have New York, Los Angeles, all and right.
Chicago.
There
we go.
You got it. I'm going to give it to her, Will, because I
live
right.
I don't think I didn't know that.
Those Silver Springs was definitely wrong. That's definitely to our old company.
Our old company.
All right, guys. What was the original broadcast medium of NBC?
It was a radio network, right?
He said it first.
We both got it.
All right. We'll give you. So you got two. You've got three. She's got two. All right. Very nice. What is the longest running show on NBC?
Meet the Press.
No.
What? It's the longest running show
I think.
Of all
okay.
Time.
Let me say it. What's the longest running scripted show on NBC?
Law and Order.
Yep, Dana got it.
Dun,
I'm sorry.
Maybe Meet the Press is right.
You guys
the
Google Meet the Press tonight, okay? Everybody listen.
George Stephanopoulos. all right, guys.
Turn Mustard, bitch.
Wait, are all we right. all tied up?
I think we're all tied up.
All tied up.
All right, guys. What award shows does NBC have the rights to broadcast?
Golden
She's
Globes.
Going to get this.
One more.
No, the second one. You could get it.
Emmys?
Yes. Okay, you're tied up again. This is the tiebreaker. This is the tiebreaker, guys.
That's because I worked the Golden Globes one.
I know, you
fun.
Did. And isn't that when you saw Tina Fey?
It was when I saw Tina Fey.
Oh, jealous.
And I was not a cool cucumber, but I don't think she saw my face.
Okay. Okay, guys, last question for all the glory and honor and for the winning of the... Which coast is best? And you're not, this had nothing
There's
to do with what you do.
There's an objective answer to this question.
Answer.
I'm looking forward to finding it out.
How many live musicals since 2013?
Four.
Wow.
West Coast wins.
We don't count the Peter Pan one, though.
West Coast.
What's the
Coast.
One that's coming right. out next, do you know?
I don't know.
The Music Man?
Mm-mm. Oh, I wish. I love Harold Hill.
Bye-bye, Birdie.
No, I didn't.
Me, Harry McAfee, appearing with Ed Sullivan.
Birdie's going to the honors.
Kimmy laughed
so at much
my
chaos
Paul Lind
on this
impression.
Right now, and I love it. All right.
Before you guys have to
epitome,
go.
Okay, I just want to say the winner of the page off, is Dana Lilly with a
I should not be cheering.
Will, you turn, Coach.
You're so supportive.
Well, you let me.
All right. I'm afraid we went long, so I know we have to let you guys go. We might keep talking. I'll decide later. But guys, thank you so much for coming.
We love you.
Keep listening to 30 for 30. Talk 30 for me. Damn it.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, bye.
Okay, Kelsey.
All right, so we knew that they both had hard outs, and so, but we don't want to minimize what we talk about on the episode. So
no, basically, our two lovely guests had to leave. But we're not done. We felt like there was more to say about these episodes, particularly with both Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
And I didn't even get to go into it. There's a lot of stuff with Jack, with Alec Baldwin, I wanted to discuss. So we're going to talk a little longer without them.
Yes, but we love them, and we are so thankful. They were great.
Mm-hmm.
They were fantastic.
We love them.
Cool.
I love them. I live with one of them.
Yes.
So, so I really love them.
So I don't even know where we should start with. So
I think Pete is a really great foil in these episodes. That's where I want to start. We talked about last week. You know, I was thinking a lot about what you talked about last week, right? With about Pete, AV Club was really passionate about like Pete's role in the show and how he makes it. He's the straight man and he makes everything better. And I realized how true that is because his response is him making those noises behind.
Oh God!
Behind Liz while she's talking to Rosemary. It's so delightful, like getting that, because that reminded me very much of when I met Edgar Wright and when I like was an idiot. I was 21 funny. Years old. I was a baby, guys. I didn't know what I was doing, but I kind of lost my mind in front of
Edgar
Wright.
I can't remember when we saw him. Was that your first time seeing him?
No. When did we see him?
We saw him when J.J. Abrams was interviewing him.
No, that was the second or third time.
Was that okay?
There was like 2 years of my life where I literally stalked Edgar Wright. I shouldn't say that because I don't want this used against me in a court of law.
Right.
I semi-stalked Edgar Wright in the sense where if he had an event, I was at it and probably in the front row. Because in my defense, I think it's pretty cool for a 21-year-old's number one crush to be Edgar Wright. I think that showed my great taste in art and culture. But the truth of it is I just was super in love with him. I thought he was so cute and funny. And I was 21 and lame, and I didn't have a real boyfriend, so I was in love with Edgar Wright, and I cheated.
Might as well.
I went to every event he had, and I met him at a Scott Pilgrim signing, and Liz Lemon was cool in comparison to me. Mm-hmm. I was not cool. I was real lame. So I really enjoyed this interaction. I love Pete, like, because Pete is my friend Tim, who heard me say all those stupid things to Edgar Wright, and was very kind to me afterwards as I was like just absolutely mortified.
Like, you weren't crazy. You were good.
You didn't respond to when he said, "How are you?" with your name. How are you? I'm Kimmy. So deeply proud of myself. So deeply proud of myself.
Oh my gosh. Do you know who Phil Spector is?
I do know who Phil Spector is. What's the Phil Spector reference again?
Where Tracy's talking about how he wants to get into dogfighting, and Grizzer.com says, man, this is Phil Spector's entourage all over again.
That's okay. I coughed during that line because I have a cold. So I couldn't hear it. Yes. No. They weren't Phil Spector's entourage. That is such a great joke.
Yes. And for those of you who don't know, he was a famous music producer and stuff, but in 2003 was convicted of a murder of Lena Clarkson. And she was found with like a gunshot in her mouth, and he was like, yeah, like he said she kissed the gun and it accidentally went off, so it was an accidental suicide.
I hate when I kiss my gun and it just goes off, like, I just want to kiss it so much,
right?
I know. No, he's crazy. I was going surfing HBO and they have a Phil Spector movie starring Al Pacino, and I'm like, ooh, they're gonna really bring out the crazy in that. That's gonna be great. But I forgot that they're in the entourage, man. The best entourage is to be in Grizzen.com.
Yes.
Oh, that dog fighting thing is just so painful. Ugh. Also, those dogs they choose, though, are perfect.
Are those Pomeranian?
They did it on purpose.
Oh, it was adorable.
It was so great.
Like, typical dog fighting dogs.
And their faces when they bring it in, because they know what they just did to him. They're so funny.
I really, really enjoy it. Ugh.
No one else responded to my no one responded to my Happy Days query, though. I said Tom Bosley and then he just went off. Have you not watched Happy Days?
I've seen a handful of episodes. Okay. I've never watched it.
I bet it was that Potsy. Sit on it, Potsy.
Got it.
I'm just making Happy Days references now.
No, it's, and again, it's one of those things where it's like I've seen it and I know the theme song and that sort of thing.
I love Happy Days. It was my favorite show when I was 13.
It was always
I watched
on,
all of it.
Like at like Channel 11, like it was that and like In Griff's show and
TV Land did a lot of it.
Yeah.
I would like like I'd be home sick or on weekends, I'd be watching it like 13-year-old cool me just watching and being like, Richie Cunningham, so cute. So much of my life is run by crushes I've had. Like so much of my love in my life is just powered by like weirdo crushes.
You're like, you're cute, I'll follow you.
I know. I know.
I am never the one who normally notices like the fashion and stuff like that. But when Jenna goes down to confront Donnie and be like, I need a new jacket.
That wrap dress and that necklace. No,
it's the necklace.
It's quite a statement necklace. Oh, that is the like definition of statement necklace.
This giant diamond, not diamond shaped, not actual diamond square necklace. And it is ginormous and I think it's hideous.
I know, but I will say it sits on her like clavicle, like her décolletage.
It works
nicely
for her body.
And that dress. It looks good in that dress, but I would never wear that necklace. God bless you, Jenna.
Yeah.
It's very of the time, we'll say. Yes,
that is an accurate way.
Okay, can we talk about that scene with Rosemary when they're in the writer's room pitching?
Oh, gosh.
That scene is intense. First of all, her saying the word, I don't even want, like saying the word mulatto was the most terrifying thing. Someone actually said that word to me recently and
really?
I didn't know what to do.
And you're like,
It's same as Rosemary. She meant well, but it was a terrible thing.
I don't think we're allowed to say any of those words.
I don't think we can say any of those words. So I related to this moment very deeply. But did you see Toof's face?
I was watching his face and I was waiting for him to be completely appalled.
He looked sad though.
It was bizarre. Like I expected a bigger reaction based on when Tracy says the N-word before and his reaction, and maybe that's just him, his relationship with Tracy, but like he was sitting there like eating up what she was saying and then she said that and he just like his face kind of like drops.
He just looks sad.
But doesn't get like, oh my gosh, you just said that. Yeah,
It hit me as like a very, it looked like a weird, like a very intentional choice, an intentional choice to place him right next to her. But then they pan
kind of
away
a, like,
from
it's
him.
Okay. Like
no,
that sort of a thing.
I don't even think it's an okay. For me, it just felt like there was more happy in that scene, but they didn't have the time to, like they just ended up having to cut things or something. Because he's like really into it at first. And then she says that and he just looks really crestfallen.
Oh, interesting.
But then they get, but instead of lingering on that, they cut to Frank and Frank's like, let's do it or whatever.
With his hat that says balls.
I know, I wrote that one down. I would just imagine, and this is me taking a very silly show very seriously, but I would imagine that if I were a writer and this woman of like this great comedy legend is in there and then says something like that was hurtful to me,
yeah,
I wouldn't be angry, I'd just be crestfallen and disappointed, and that's what I read on his face.
Interesting.
But there's a very good chance I'm way overreading into this. I just was struck by it. I had never noticed his expression before, and I think I was so aware of it this time.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know who Haldeman was, but I knew later on. I'm like, oh, it must be Republican because of Jack being thrilled by it. And then I looked it up.
I'm gonna explain to me. I think I know what it is.
Well, he's Nixon's chief of staff.
Oh, okay. I mixed it up with Halliburton. I confused it with Halliburton, which is that giant, like, kind of Koch brothers-esque corporation that's very Republican and is the epitome of the man. I thought that's what Haldeman was. I didn't realize. But so you and I were just Saree, who were like, is that a person?
Well, I knew it was a person.
I'll be honest, I might have been as bad as Saree then because I thought it was a corporation.
Well, it's funny because when I was like, I don't know who this is, so I knew I was going to look it up. And when I look something up and it ends up being a politician, I always assume that you're going to know who it is just because you tend to be a little bit more in on that stuff than me.
Thanks for having faith in me, and I'm glad I disappointed you.
I am. I'm glad that I didn't have to be like, did you know? Like, I was going to be like, Nixon's chief of staff, and I was expecting you to be like, well, duh. I'm like, oh, well.
I'm only halfway through. I started All the President's Men the other week when I was sick, and I haven't finished it yet. But I will say Dustin Hoffman is amazing in that. But all of that to say, I haven't finished it, so I wouldn't expect me to know it yet. And I'm sure that's in the last half. It's about
coming,
Nixon,
it's
so. I was so close.
I didn't look in that room, like the scene where you can see Toofer's face stuff. I don't think Josh was in that room. There's a mention of Josh, but I don't think Josh is actually in that room.
It would be better if he was like, we knew that actor was Lonnie.
Was busy on something else.
Doing something else, right? I mean, I don't. Maybe he was. Is he doing plays or something at that time? That's
maybe.
My only thought. Because what's his face later when they bring in Danny, and then Danny's not very much. Like I, my gut was that he was just in a lot of musicals because he's one of the most talented singers I've ever heard. My mother doesn't like 30 Rock, and then every time she hears that bit where he sings "Danny Boy," my mom always tears up. It's really cute.
The pipes are calling.
I know, it's great. So Josh isn't in it, and it's just we're losing Josh. You know what? Is it the end of the world? Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he was funny, but I felt like they should have kept him around like Frank or Lutz. I don't think they should have kept it, like gotten rid of him.
I would think that clearly when he left, like nobody was sad. And then when they did the same thing with Danny later on, like clearly the audience just wasn't looking for a main white.
See, I was
TGS
actually really
actor.
Upset that Danny wasn't around.
Oh, you were.
I liked Danny.
It was one of those things where I didn't notice when he, like, I liked him when he was there, but I didn't notice when he left. Same thing with Josh. Didn't notice when he was left.
I don't notice when Josh is gone, though. I just feel bad for the actor. I'm empathetic for Kelsey. Lonnie. I feel really bad for him. So
you're so nice.
Ugh, whatever. So. I really love the page music. They bring da da ba do ba do. They do like that weird, like a Glee clubby type thing.
Yeah,
like, it's very much reminiscent of music in Glee. Yeah. This is pre-Glee too, so get it, Jeff pre-Glee. Richmond. But it like that really great kind of slightly sinister music for that weird like page subculture.
Yeah, when they're like, it's a page off, page off.
I just think this has some of the best TV music. And maybe that's me just because I don't pay attention to music on TV very much. Mm-hmm. But I think this has some of the most like. Involved music I've seen on it.
Oh,
a
yeah.
Sitcom.
How we talk about how like the characters, the music plays with the characters.
Characters, what? With the characters?
Characters, the characters.
Much more than like, because I think of Arrested Development and like Seinfeld and shows with really distinct music, but I don't have. It doesn't vary in the way it does on this show. But yeah. Then again, how many showrunners are married to musical to composers, right?
See, all that does is it makes me. Oh, that's not even the same thing. Why? It's funny. When you say that, the first thing that popped in my mind was Smash, the TV show. And it's not really. Have you seen Smash?
I watched like the first three episodes and I was like, boring.
I love that show so
Sorry,
much.
Sorry, not to knock it.
But it reminded me of how the two main characters, because they weren't husband and wife, obviously, but it just reminded me how they were just always together, that it was, I'm going to write this, you're going to write the music. And it would just kind of, it made it very easy
love.
For them to work together.
What? This is about 227 movie? What is that?
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So, because originally Jack says, Tracy, you can do anything you want except dog fighting. So, now he wants to do dog fighting. So, then Jack comes in later and says, what's the one thing I asked you not to do? And he said, that 227 movie, the new Jack A City.
What is that?
So, there was a sitcom from 85 to 90 called 227, and Jack A. Harry was one of the actors in it. So, I think it was like a movie with that happened.
Good reference. Don't you love his face when he fires Jonathan? Jonathan's little face?
Oh, poor Jonathan.
Just that noise. He goes, what? Like his little like chirp is so cute.
And then you can hear in the background when Liz leaves, the closed
captioning. Him crying.
When he says, I'm going to kill myself. That's what the closed captioning says.
Oh, no. He loves him so much.
Jack tells Liz, because like Jack says, you need to carry Rosemary. You need to kill Rose. You need to fire Rosemary.
Okay.
Oh, cannot talk today. And
these are such great like things to mix up.
Right?
This is like a Thomas Beckett situation. You're going to be like, someone rid me of this meddlesome writer. And then she gets murdered.
Oh. But Jack is saying, you got into, because Liz, like, I don't want to fire her. She's the reason I'm in this. And he's like, no, you got into business because you're funny and you're weird and you're socially retarded. So when I was in eighth grade, our eighth grade history teacher, our honors history teacher, Mr. Clark, sat our class down and he told all of us that we were socially retarded because all we do is hang out with each other. Like the smart kids hang out together. You get socially retarded. You don't know how to get out of your bubble. And so I was like, Mr. Clark and Mr. Donaghy, very similar.
Okay, so this scene where Jack is doing the therapy scene where Jack is doing these impressions, first of all, it's fabulous.
I wrote that. Sorry, before I loved when Jack was telling Tracy he needed to get into therapy and that. Tracy's line, I thought I don't need therapy, I'm just mentally ill.
Okay, it's a flashback to.
Yeah, but I just thought that was such a bit where, like, just like there's a difference between. I thought that was a profound, like, mentally ill statement. Like, that when you're mentally ill, that doesn't necessarily mean you need therapy. Like, sometimes, like, it's just a. Ooh, you're questioning me.
Interesting.
And I thought too, because, like,
do you think if someone's mentally ill that there's a situation where they don't need help?
I don't think therapy necessarily.
Well, what would they need?
Sometimes medicine. Sometimes. You know what I mean?
Usually those two things go together.
But not always. I wouldn't think always.
I think most of the time, because the site you go to a therapist or you go like to a psychiatrist, like, but a psychiatrist usually has counseling degrees as well, I would think.
But if, do you think, like a schizophrenic, if you, like, do you think that you have to go to a therapist in order to get medicine to help that?
You have to go to a psychiatrist and talk to them for a while and they have to learn about your life and your habits. That's how you get diagnosed. It's not just a doctor and a pad.
It's interesting.
I think it's more of a setting.
Oh, I've always just separate. Like, I'm not saying that you don't, like, you don't have to go to a therapist. Even I guess I've just never, a mentally ill thing. Like, sometimes it's a disease, and sometimes it's something deeper than just the disease. I think.
Okay.
And so I feel like if it's a, and I thought just because with Carrie Fisher on there,
it's so interesting. My friend
the
Sheila
drug jokes
that,
and the mentally ill.
But they
comments.
Went into there was an episode about mental illness,
mm-hmm.
and like and that sort of and those struggles and families. troubles of an absent father. It's so interesting that's the episode Carrie Fisher was on. And to what you were saying with mental illness, I don't know if I necessarily agree, but I don't know if I necessarily disagree either.
Fair enough.
I'll think. Are you basically asserting that you like that this says mental illness is more than just something you could fix in therapy?
Yes.
Okay, that's what you're saying. I misunderstood. I thought you were saying like mental illness, you don't have to get therapy, you can just do it. And I was like,
no.
Whoa.
Oh no, no. I
thought you were lightening it, not saying it's really important.
No, oh, no, no, really no. Yeah, yeah. Right. Sorry. Thank you for clarifying that for me. Yes, 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 yes.
No, then I think I tend to agree with you. Though I don't like him using it as an excuse to not do therapy, because he clearly needs the therapy.
Right. For other, like the issues that he's had, he might actually be mentally ill, but he does have some other things that are not just a mentally ill inspired issue, I guess. I don't know.
No, I definitely got that. So this scene with Jack.
Yes.
Right. With these.
I wrote he kills it. Alec kills it. Dang, he just kills
this
it.
This was his Emmy scene.
Oh, was it?
This was, and now here's the thing. I don't, when I say that, I'm not 100% this is what they submitted. I think it is, though, because at the Emmys, this is the scene they showed him when they're talking about his performance. So I think that, I don't know if he was nominated the first season. I can't remember, but I know he was nominated this season. And I think he won. And I think this scene is so good. And it's so, again, like they're dealing with like stereotypes that are kind of tricky, and it's a little tricky the way he's doing it. But just the core
I think having
person,
Tracy there encouraging it helps a little bit.
And the fact that it's like meaningful to the character.
Yes.
It's still a little tricky, but you know what? I'm at a point where I don't care. It's so funny and he's so good in it. And it's so sweet, and it's just, and I don't know, it's just showcasing Alec at what he does. Like, he's so good at
like,
it.
And I think it was the AV Club article or something on Reddit or something where they were commenting about how like this is such a change, where like this is a scene where Alec is playing the goofy character and Tracy is the straight-laced character, okay, because Tracy is just absorbed in this and he's not making the jokes a little bit, like he's okay, now you do this and you do this, and like he's just a absorbed in the scene that Alec or that Jack is creating, and it's just very different, where normally Tracy's the one there being silly and doing something funny and other people are watching him, and it was just interesting watching him watch this and absorb it and love it and agree with it and get to a good place with it at the end.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this is a really interesting scene. Yeah. And honestly, I can't fully unpack it. It's very complicated, but I really enjoy it. And I think it's just an incredible performance by Alec Baldwin. And I think if anyone else had done it, it wouldn't have been as good. But I think because it was him, and he's so masterful.
And I think it also helped like with the whole, like with him like towing the line of like, I think it also helped having the therapist there shouting. To be like, like, I think that definitely helped.
Are we just doing good times now?
Right.
That is so fun. Dynamite.
Right.
Also, I love his Tracy impression so much. I just act out because I want your love.
Right. And then the soup thing where it's like, whoa, now let's not. Oh my gosh.
So we get to her apartment in Little Chechnya.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So first of all, let's start our own network. So this is after Jack fires Liz and Rosemary. And I just love that with that when they're walking around town and she makes the idea like, yeah, let's start our own network called Bitch TV or whatever our next idea is.
The second thing we think of, it's so funny.
And then is that guy carrying a gun? Yeah, but don't worry, he's not a cop.
And the way he like uses the gun to like, he's like, he's holding like it to his face,
scratching his head or whatever. Yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Just back to the Bitch TV though, I love, I've just, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are always doing interesting things with the word bitch and trying to re-own it and rework it, and I find it very entertaining. Like their whole thing of like, Bitch is the New Black, they did on SNL. Yes. That was really big. Oh, I love it.
So good.
It's really funny. But her apartment, it was so interesting sitting there. I just read a novel that dealt a lot with a hippie who got older, or an activist, a political activist who gets older. And what does that look like, right? When you're young and you're passionate, it's really okay to be poor and really okay because you believe in this, love it. But there's just something, it's a little harder when that person is in their 50s or 60s and they're like, is it worth it? And it's really weird. Like, why do we feel like that? Like, if we look at someone young, it's totally okay that they're scraping by. But there's something about when you see someone in their 50s doing that, it's a little harder to watch.
It's like, you should have settled down by now. You should have, like, there's that.
But should they? I mean, I agree. I think so. But it's like, why do I feel that way? Why do I want them to be more comfortable and, like, have more money and have come into line more? Part of me likes that she's still fighting it.
That's the stereotype of, like, as you're older, you should have learned how to balance your budget. You should have learned how, you should learn how to be an adult, I guess. And that's just part of being an adult. You assume that you have a savings account and you, like, you've done all these things to prepare yourself so you can retire one day, and that when you're in your 40s or 50s or whatever, and if you're not there, it's just kind of like, you never grew up, did you? I'm not saying that's right, but that's just kind of what
no, and
like.
Also doesn't help that she's like super drunk and all these other
well,
things.
Well, that's, yeah, she's
that
pouring wine
about the
thermos.
Jamaican man across the hall. No, I really, it's such an interesting idea of like, what does it actually look like? You know, is it bad to toe the line with a company? Like, where do you sacrifice? And again, like normal, 30 Rock doesn't give an answer necessarily. Mm-hmm. They just kind of say like, this is interesting and funny, isn't it? There's a lot of tension here, and that's where the comedy's born.
I meant to ask Will earlier, and maybe you'll know this, and I probably could look it up, because she makes a comment where she's like, is that the F train? What is the F train known for? Like, does it end in the bad part of New York? Do you know, like, is that a sign that you're in an apartment that's super cheap, and so you're so near the F train that that's a big deal?
The F train goes from North Queens all the way down through Manhattan and down to the very bottom of Brooklyn.
Oh, so maybe this is saying
it could go anywhere.
This is in Queens or Brooklyn or something. Yeah, that
I mean, and Queens you would is think generally that, nice. Brooklyn has both nice and rough.
But yeah, you would think though, because like, if it goes through Manhattan, that means that she literally could be living. I just thought that I feel like that's something that somebody from New York would appreciate, a joke like that. And I was like, so what is the F train? Like, I guess, or maybe it's houses and apartments are worth less when they're next to a train.
Well, it's just gross. It's so, it reminds me of Spider-Man. I don't know.
And then you get the great line.
Oh, the line.
Help me, Liz Lemon. You're my only hope.
Doesn't she write about that in the Bible, how fulfilling it was to write that line?
I don't remember her talking about
it. I feel like I've heard her talk about at some point, like, it's writing possible. That line. Because, I mean, we just know that all that Star Wars stuff comes out from the bottom of Tina Fey's soul, how much she loves it.
She
so to be able to write you're one of your heroes. Because, I mean, Carrie Fisher would be a hero not only for just being Princess Leia, but for being this incredible writer and this feminist who talks about issues and is so funny and has such good sense of story.
Mm-hmm.
And being funny. You've seen Harry Met Sally, right?
Yes.
Oh, I love her in When Harry Met Sally. And so it's really... I don't know. It's really, I just would imagine how fulfilling it would be for Tina Fey to write that
to
line.
To get to write for her.
And get to say, have her say that. Oh, it's so funny.
You're like, can you just say Tina Fey instead? Instead of Liz Lemon.
Help me, Tina Fey.
That.
You're my only hope.
Okay.
But we get the other big line coming up too. The other big line from this episode.
Oh, yes. Which I didn't, because you see that line in this line, of course, is... Never go with a hippie to a second location.
I love that line. My coworker had a print of that in her office and I loved it.
I see that line all over Instagram, Twitter that people say, and I have never realized it was in this episode and it was about Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, it is. It's about Rosamund.
I was like, oh, Rosemary. Shut up. That's who it's about.
Her name is Rosemary, not Rosamund. I don't know why I mix it up.
Rosamund. So we get a little bit of Pete in this episode a couple of times. Did you hear that Pete? So the page off thing happens because that's the only way that Kenneth can get a new page jacket is by doing a page off and winning. And they're about to have the page off. And then Pete walks in. He's like, what the hell is happening here? No one's answering the phones. And Jenna's trying to, well, this is why. And Pete says, NBC is a $1 billion company, which just in Seinfeld vision, Jack calls it a $4 million company, which I just thought was interesting. I think because of Seinfeld vision, the worth of the company just skyrocketed.
I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense in this situation.
Because that one.
We have so many issues with those numbers from Seinfeld vision. There's so many flaws in those numbers.
It's true.
I think my other favorite line from this episode is going to be, she's like, I'm begging, but like those proud begging. Like those kids who dance on the subway.
That's such
that
a good line.
That line is so funny.
It's so great. I wrote that down too.
I found so funny about that. It's just like the idea that she connects with, she wants to be like those spunky kids. Like you could just see Liz Lemon sitting on the subway being like, these kids are great.
That is going to be Liz one day. Did you notice that in the background of that final scene where Jack and Liz are standing at the window and they're drinking wine in the background? So there's the TV above the fireplace that we know is there because in the end of last episode, GE, and he like calls it a bitch or whatever. Son of a bitch. There we go. He doesn't call the TV a bitch. But on this episode, the TV must be like a screensaver or something. And it's a picture. And the picture is the picture from the episode with Emily Mortimer's character with the lion eating the horse.
Oh.
So they've now taken the picture that Jack physically owns. They've taken and digitized it and put it on the TV, which I just thought was funny.
Interesting.
I took a picture.
That is funny.
They referenced the show Supercomputer twice, and that is not a real show.
Is Supercomputer not a show?
Mm-mm, I looked it up.
I literally 100% believe that was a show. Yet Manimal exists, which, by the way, Will has now texted us the photo from it, and it's amazing. I'm gonna Google this. It's not that I don't believe you. Well,
I didn't look it up on a IMDb, but I did look it up on the computer, and it popped up on a list of fake TV shows.
What is NBC's supercomputer?
It popped up on a list of like fake TV shows.
Like, oh whoa,
yeah.
All right, I accept that.
I assumed it was some sort of list of fictional television shows. That's the first thing that pops up when you bring it up, and it's like listed.
That says so much about my faith in NBC that I was like, "That's definitely a show,
right?
That so existed."
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is a good one. I have nothing else to say about this episode. It was beautiful seeing Carrie Fisher. Mm-hmm. I've been feeling very nostalgic about her and Debbie Reynolds for obvious reasons.
Yes.
I'm really excited to watch. I think it's this weekend, actually. Their HBO documentary comes out, so I'm probably going to watch it.
Okay. That was very fast for them to put that together. Do you think it...
It was already being made.
Okay. I was like...
It's already premiered in places. It wasn't going to get released originally until this summer on HBO. They have like release schedules, but then this happened, so they pushed it forward.
Okay. I was like, that makes me feel better. I think that's all I had to say about this. Did you have a favorite line? I know there were a couple of favorite lines.
I'm going to stand by. I mean, I want to choose the big ones, Lizzie, You're My Only Hope, and Never Go With a Hippie to a Second Location, but I'm going to choose those dancing kids on the subway. I love that line. So all three of those, really. Right.
I really like that line too, but I ended up, when I was watching this, the line that I bold as my favorite was actually when Liz walks into Jack's office because Jonathan comes down and says, "Your grandmother is here talking to Jack." And she's like, "Nana Lemon? Oh my gosh, Rosemary." And she runs up there, and after Rosemary is done talking with Jack, like, "Haha, that would have been whatever." And she leaves, and Jack turns to Liz and says, "Fire her, and don't ever make me talk to a woman that old again." I love that line.
He's such a jerk.
Yeah, he does such a great job at that. I loved it.
All right. Well, that's pretty much everything. I think we covered these episodes.
I think love Carrie Fisher. That was exciting having Miss. I said Miss Will and Mr. Dana. Nope.
Oh no, definitely Miss Will and Mr. Dana.
Miss Will and Mr. Dana.
Oh, he won't get mad at me tomorrow for that.
Or Dana.
She'll be fine.
Dana.
She loved him. We talked about it earlier. She loves a good gender swap.
That's true. That's true.
Well, here, so you can find either of them he's at Will Blanchard, and then she's at Lily Dana, and they're both really funny tweeters and Instagrammers. Basically, they're tweeters. Basically, with Dana, all you'll get is photos of the cat, and it's pretty adorable. So, and at Henny the Queen, definitely give that a follow. Kelsey, give us your plugs.
You can find me places at Redheaded Blonde on Instagram and Twitter. I tweet about work, and that's pretty much it.
I have some plugs this week because it's the first time ever this is actually getting released before my dang show I produce. So I have a couple shows actually I want to plug. So the first thing is the show I produce at the Nerdist School is going to be on January 20th. We're still figuring out who's going to be on it, but it's going to be really fun. So it's 8 p.m. January 20th. So it's Friday night. Definitely come out. Perfect. It's going to be really fun. I'm really excited. The people we have that I'm working on getting are really great. So I'm very hopeful. Every second Wednesday of the month, I'm now working a new show at the Virgil. That's a really great storytelling show called Radio Picture Show. It's really lovely. It's hosted by Lauren Cook and Shauna McGarry. Yeah.
Okay.
Catherine, former guest. Do you say ghost? She was a ghost.
She was a former ghost, and now she's a real person. It's great.
What if we had a ghost on this show? Eileen Stritch. I know. So, former guest Catherine Leon works on that show with me, but it's a really great storytelling show with visual musical elements. It's really fun. I just started working on it. I really like it. So definitely come check that out. Otherwise, at Kimchi Lucas, follow us. And there have been some new reviews. Thank you. Please, if you can think of it, please give us reviews. We're at Talk 30 to Me Pod everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you can email us at talk30tomepod@gmail.com. We want to hear from you.
Yeah, those reviews are a lot of fun. So
we usually send them to each other.
Did you read this one? And so it was great. So
mainly Kelsey does because I forget to check everything. So yeah. Kelsey keeps me up to date on what's going on. So, but yeah, that's all I have. You?
I think that's about it.
I covered it. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit BoardWalkAudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.